my last session at school, I had a professor who was a former major in the Army, a fellow named Joe Biggs. And it's B-I-G-O-S. And Joe taught a chemical engineering lab course in which we were supposed to run apparatus and take data and do an experiment and write it up and make a report. And one of the apparatus that we were supposed to work on was an evaporator, and very shortly into running it, it became obvious that there was a big leak in this thing, and there was never going to be any data off it. So I went to Joe and made him an offer. I said, Joe, we'll tear this thing apart and we'll fix it, provided we don't have to do a report on it. And he said, oh, no, you've got to do the experiment, you've got to do the report. So I had two cohorts, and I left them fussing with the evaporator, putting on a good act, and I went outside in one of the parked cars, and I sat there, and I calculated backward what the experiment would have turned out to be and what the data would have turned out to be. And cranked out all the information to write a report, and that's how we did our report. But this is the caliber of professor that we encountered in coming back to school. At any rate, I graduated in a beautiful springtime, little expecting to live within stone's throw of the Cathedral of Learning. I'd had a number of job interviews. The job market was, I would say, fair, not great, but fair. And some of these were kind of interesting, too. One of them was with a representative from Phelps Dodge, a copper mining and smelting company out west. And he told me that the job consisted of a 2-year training program during which you were shifted from one plant to another, staying no more than 6 months in one location, that you couldn't be promoted during this time, and that you were in training for this 2-year period. And what did I think of that? And I told him I didn't think a hell of a lot of it. What would he think of something like that? And I got up and walked out. Then there were other more productive interviews. I had a very good rapport with the gentleman from the Ethel Corporation in Detroit.
Who's Ethel?
E-T-H-Y-L. The Ethel Corporation was the only company in the country that made tetraethyl lead. Try that for spelling. You got it?
Yeah, I own stock in that.
All right. Okay, good. An excellent company, by the way. And we liked each other at first sight, and the company sounded very good, and I went out to Detroit and had a very good interview. And was offered a job and accepted. And then I went on vacation for a couple of weeks because I thought I'd have a long time to work. When I came back, there was a letter from Elliott Company in Jeanette making me another offer. And this one sounded like a considerably better deal. And I felt very much torn at that point. So I called up my interviewer and friend at the Ethel Corporation, and told him my predicament, and he said, just remember one thing, this company will be here a long time after you and I are gone, and you have to do what you have to do, so feel free. And I did. I went to work for Elliott Company in Jeanette. And that was the first time I encountered some really blatant anti-Semitism.
Oh, did you move there?
Oh, yes. I lived in Greensburg. I rented a room in Greensburg.
curious to know, what was your starting salary at that time?
I think it was something like $275 a month. Which, by the way, was a very good starting salary at that time. That was way above the average.
Very good. More than mine, and it was exactly the same time. What was that anti-Semitism incident you referred to?
Well, first of all, my immediate boss was a fellow named Philip Freneau, F-R-E-N-E-A-U. Freneau traced the name to a Revolutionary War poet who was an ancestor, and the name was handed down through the maternal line. And the women all kept the name Freneau because they were so proud of their revolutionary war antecedent. But at any rate, he was a very nice gentleman. And he worked for another very nice gentleman, Dana, D-A-N-A, Barbour, B-A-R-B-O-U-R. Dana was supervisor of all of the engineering divisions, and Phil was in charge of one division that handled ejectors and barometric condensers. I'm waiting and watching Howard write so that I don't
just keep talking.
Get ahead of him. All right.
No, you're the one who has to register on there.
I get all this. I type all this up from the tape, too.
All
that's
right.
In case the tape doesn't
I
work
see.
Early.
Okay, very good. So, at any rate, when I arrived on site, there were a bunch of forms and papers to fill out for one thing and another. And one of them asked religion, and I answered. And that caused a great deal of consternation. The consternation was because apparently there was a policy that came from on high that probably started with the president, Phil Elliott, against Jews. Although both Phil and Dana said that they had no feeling about this one way or another, and that they were glad to have me on board, and they advised me just not to make a big show of it.
And how did you feel about it, though? I mean, it must have been very upsetting.
Well, it was annoying. It was... I felt that they were honest in what they were saying, and I had no reason to doubt it ever from them. These two were good people. It was annoying to find myself in that kind of company. Rather interestingly enough, there were several other Jews there, one of whom was in charge of a very large project in research, in which Elliott Company developed an oxygen plant of a unique design. And that was Irv Roberts, and Irv went on to become a vice president of Kaiser Steel. Or was it Kaiser Aluminum? I don't remember.
Beach.
Yeah. And there were several other Jews there, all of them held good positions, and it was kind of surprising to me that, I mean, the whole thing didn't make sense. It just didn't hang together. So, and I never encountered a further incident. That was it. I was on the job a week, and the job consisted of each order we got for ejector and condenser was a separate individual design. So these were designed, and then they were manufactured, and then we supervised the test floor, and each design was tested to meet its guarantee. And if it didn't meet its guarantee, it was my job to go down and make that happen. And I was on the job, I think, maybe 3 weeks, perhaps 4 weeks, learning all of these ins and outs. And my boss went on vacation for 2 weeks. And these orders came rolling in. And I remember one of them was for a four-stage ejector. And a four-stage ejector is pretty tricky. And with a lot of sweating and with a little bit of advice from a sales manager for ejectors, I designed it and it started its way through the shop. Some months later, I met that same ejector in the shop and I had to make it work. And let me tell you, that was a sweat. But I did. The job is a very interesting experience. Working with the test floor was really quite enjoyable. There was a test crew of three fellows who were superb mechanics, and one of them was very smart, but of course they had only high school educations. And I spent a lot of time on the test floor watching them, I'm not saying anything, but just watching what they did and what their procedures were. And then after about a month or 6 weeks of it, I took charge, and they wondered how I knew all of what I knew, and of course they had taught it to me. The hookups consisted of hooking up temporary steam lines and water lines and running the equipment. And I was down there one day, they used flexible hoses a lot on steam lines. And they hooked up a flexible hose on a steam line, and the hose was leaking pretty badly. And I said, tell me, is that common practice for you to use a hose in that condition? And the answer was yes. And I said, shut down and pipe it solid. And there was a lot of resistance. And they shut down and they piped it solid. But as soon as they took a pipe wrench to it, the hose fell apart. So
could have killed someone.
That's right. So from then on, we got along better. In fact, we got along very well. And I actually became quite friendly with the foreman of that test crew. We did a lot of development work on new products, and I did a lot of theoretical calculations to put together the design book. And the whole job was quite interesting to me for a couple of years. At the end of that time, I felt that I had had all these experiences with the shop that I needed to have, all of the experiences that that job had to offer, and it was time to move on. It was about that time that I started going with a young woman in Pittsburgh. Her name was Lois Marks, M-A-R-K-S. And after a short courtship, we were married. That was in 1950. And
where was she from?
She was from Squirrel Hill. In fact, she was one of the few Jewish girls I ever dated. What was your question?
The year?
1950.
I'm sorry.
And we bought a little house in Greenfield. And then I had meanwhile I was looking for another job, and I found a job at Blahnox Chem Plants Division in downtown Pittsburgh. I have my chronology a little bit mixed up because we first lived in an apartment in East McKeesport.
Blahnox in downtown?
Downtown Pittsburgh. And when I took a job in Pittsburgh, then we bought a house and lived in Pittsburgh. shortly after after going with Lonox, I was sent to Schenectady. A miserable little mill town. And I was...
Is that in New York?
Yeah, Schenectady, New York.
I hate to agree with you.
I threw that out because Howard didn't have worked in Schenectady. For GE.
Yeah, you sure did.
But at any rate, GE was doing work on a shore-based facility using MAC, N-A-K, as a mixture of sodium and potassium into heat transfer fluid with very high heat transfer properties. And we couldn't find a decent place to live there, and we lived in this scruffy, miserable apartment in a very hot summer. Just sweated our fannies off.
That was 51.
And that was in 51. And then back to Pittsburgh.
Were you at the research, at the nuclear laboratory there?
Yeah. Lois was working for the Homestead Messenger. She would go off to work, and I would go off to work downtown. But then Lois became ill, and through a series of doctors and diagnostic procedures, it turned out that she had a form of blood cancer. She died in September. I dearly loved her mother and father. Remained friendly with both of them until they died. Much more than friendly with Cecil, who was the mother. More about that later. My own mother had a stroke in Kaufman's. Never emerged from a coma, and she died 1 month almost to the day before Lois died. That was quite a year. My work went on with Blahnox, Chem Plant. It was very interesting.
Chem Plant?
Chemical Plants Division. Chem Plants for short. We were designing all kinds of plants. I hadn't been in that job very long. And I had been working on, I think, a synthetic rubber plant. And suddenly a big contract hit, and my mentor, off onto another job, and meanwhile a friend of the president of Chem Plants asked for a proposal on a separation plant to separate two very closely boiling isomers. I think they were ortho and para-difluorobenzene. You don't have to put that down. And we were given virtually no information about these materials or their properties or their behavior.
Who was it?
I'm trying to think of the name of the company. It was a company in central Pennsylvania.
Okay.
And I just can't remember. But at any rate, I did a lot of research into the properties of these compounds, and I concluded several things about them. One was that they were highly corrosive. Another was that they probably formed azeotropes, that is to say, two materials who reached the same boiling point and could not be separated by distillation. And there was nobody to refer to, and there was no help forthcoming, so I proceeded to write up a proposal and to estimate what the cost of the job was, and then I made a list of caveats which said, we are not responsible if, and the corrosion and the azeotropes and a lot of other things were mentioned and listed as part of the proposal, and exceptions for which Blahnox would not be responsible. And as luck would have it, we got the job, and as luck would further have it, somebody else designed the plan. And when they did, they forgot a few things. So, meanwhile, I was working on another job, and the plant would not start up. It wouldn't function. And there were a couple of reasons why it wouldn't function. One was they forgot to put weed poles in the trays. And the material was all solid at room temperature. So the only way to start the plant up was to heat the stills. And the way they heated the stills was to use steam. And when they did, they left a lot of water behind. When this material hit the water, it just ate through the steel like nobody's business. So they had trouble with corrosion, they had trouble with plugging, and finally, the plant never did work. The only thing that saved Blahnox's hide was the fact that all of these caveats were in that proposal, and they were not responsible for it. Now, the company for whom this plant was designed knew some of these things, and they were not forthcoming with the information for us to use in the design, for whatever reason. I had some other interesting experiences with designing plants, but finally we got the job to design Savannah River, which at that time, and maybe still, was the biggest chemical plant ever designed and built. It's just a few miles from Augusta, Georgia. And it was a giant nuclear facility, had five areas, each one of which were supposed to be duplicates, but in fact, the way it wound up, they were not duplicates. Other because the engineering of them changed as we learned and progressed from one to the other. And we had a lot of unusual problems to solve. I was in the process design group, and one of the things we had to do was to recover heavy water from the top of the still. And the way I chose to do this was to design two freezing heat exchangers which alternated between freezing and thawing. While one froze, the other thawed, and while so forth, and they cycled back and forth. And this required a whole refrigeration system to go with them, and they had to be designed such that the time it took to freeze one up was less or was more than the time it took to thaw the other heat exchanger, or the whole thing would have worked. And there was absolutely no data on what happened when one froze on heat exchanger. And it's quite a complex problem, which I won't bother to describe since no one will ever care or read about it. But I did design it, and I did go into operation. And that was back in, I'm trying to think what the date would have been. It would have been about 1952. And only a year ago, I had occasion to talk to someone in Savannah River by phone. And that same system was still working, functioning well. It was one of the few systems in Savannah River that was still working. And that's when I learned that it was better to be lucky than smart.
That's not true.
At any rate, Lonox at that time had two enormous jobs going. One was Savannah River, that I had a big part in. And the other one was at Pine Bluff, Arkansas. It was a chemical warfare plant, and both of these jobs began to wind down. That meant
where? This job?
Pine Bluff, Arkansas. Mm-hmm. And that meant that Blonox had a great deal less need for personnel. And while I was not the least bit worried about a job, I figured there was very little chance doing interesting things or promotions or anything of that sort. So the outlook wasn't all that great. By the way, I didn't mention that when I first started to work at Elliott, there was a stellar group of young engineers. These were very talented people, and they landed in marvelous spots all over the country later. And in fact, they formed an alumni group called Wishy Run Polytechnic Institute Alumni Association.
Wishy Run.
Wishy Run, because Jeanette is almost beside the Wishy Run battlefield. And this group used to meet at ASME conventions all over the country. But at any rate, we formed a young engineers group, and we had various key people in the company speak to us, and we learned all about the workings of the company, which was a wonderful education for me because it prepared me for a lot of managerial type situations. I started to...
You said
I lost my train of thought for a minute. There was something else.
Lonox's job was winding down.
Yeah.
And outlook wasn't great, and then you mentioned Bushy Run organization.
Well, I had gone back to my experience, my first job there, and it was at that time. On my first job, I was not practicing the things that I had learned in school. And I decided that I was going to lose those skills pretty fast if I didn't do something about it. So I began to go to night school at Carnegie Mellon, which was then Carnegie Tech. And I went at a rather leisurely pace. I took one course a semester. And the very first one I took was a course in unit operations taught by Dr. Bob Rothfuss, R-O-T-H-F-U-S.
Say it again.
Pardon?
R-O-T-H-F-U-S.
R-O-T-H-F-U-S. You remember Bob. with Howard. I think I introduced him to you. And we were going to work together on one project, which never came to pass. But at any rate, Bob was perhaps the best university teacher I encountered in all of my experience at Pitt, Carnegie Mellon. He was just superb, and he put what he was teaching into such good perspective that for instance, he taught me not to respect things that were in writing, particularly. And he taught me the limitations of all of the engineering tools that he talked about. And I suddenly realized those guys weren't all that great.